Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Miles, in our seat, we are thrilled to be joined by a professional futurist with a PhD in the history of science. He's been a visiting scholar at Stanford and Oxford universities and is the author of four books, including Shorter and Rest. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Alex Soojung King Pang.
Alex!
Thanks for having me, and happy National Angel Food Cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of angel food cake?
I love angel food cake.
Oh, okay,
and cake
great.
Decorating, actually. So, you know, two for one.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that a hobby of yours, decorating cakes? Or you admire the artwork?
I admire the artwork, though. Yeah. My wife and my daughter are both pretty pretty amazing bakers. So,
Okay. Well, we're so glad you joined us here today. Obviously, the listeners probably have heard me really talking about my grind set mindset.
How I get to Lambo is the thesis statement of this show.
Yeah, but as quickly as possible. You know, Tim Ferriss gave me some ideas. They aren't working very well.
Not fast enough.
I don't know
not
why.
Fast
yeah.
enough. I
not
wasn't able enough. To outsource enough of my work to enough
but yeah.
people who work for $5 an hour, unfortunately.
It didn't work that way. But we are curious to pick your mind because, yeah, it was the talk of shortened work weeks. And if that's better, I don't know, the jury's still out in my mind. We figured it's good to enlist the help of someone who has their area of expertise is in precisely that, to fight the voices that tell me to keep grinding every day and every night.
So we're mainly going off vibes on this end, and you've actually looked at data, whatever that means. So we're gonna dig into it. But before we get into that, we do like to get to know you a little bit better. And ask you, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are or what you're up to?
Well, this morning I was on Google Translate for a while looking at 4-day week in other languages. So it's something that I've been interested in for several years, and it's a movement that keeps growing, and I have to keep tracking it now in Turkish and Hungarian and stuff. It used to be relatively simple. It was English and maybe one or two other languages, but now it's just all over the place.
How is that spreading? Is it just kind of word of mouth that different companies are learning about it? Or is it coming usually from the workers themselves? Or how do you see that kind of happening?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is spreading through sort of word of mouth within industries. So, you know, you get a couple people in HR and recruiting who try it in their organizations, and then then their competitors will do it because those competitors are starting to lose people to the company that did it first. And then, you know, it gets written up in the news, and there's some ambitious politician who thinks, this is how they become, you know, governor or senator or something, right? Championing the 4-day week. And so, you know, and it kind of builds from there. And it's fortunately been something that's gotten, you know, plenty of press and plenty of attention. And so it's, you know, it's been really great to see it acquire that kind of momentum and take on a life of its own.
Yeah.
Is there anything to, like, you think, like, are there certain cultures where the just like innately some cultures are going to be a little bit harder for them to, like, cross the barrier into the 4-hour work week just based on sort of like ideas of what productivity or what, you know, someone's worth is based on work? Or is there also a thing where too, like, humanity is just kind of naturally maybe progressing towards this, where it's like, I mean, culture or not, it's like, this feels better, this works better.
Yeah, you know, I think if you got 24 hours in a day, you're gonna value this. So, I mean, you know, I have seen this in like two of the hotspots for the 4-day week are Japan and Korea, which are both countries whose languages have their own words for working yourself to death. Right.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, it's not just like Sweden and Denmark and places with really good work-life balance. You actually see it most in places that have really serious issues with like stress, overwork, etc.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely
I haven't hit that yet.
We're not on board yet. But
you said 24 hours in a day, my man.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to find some more hours.
That's right.
I got 30 in a day over here. But anyway, go on. That's another story.
It does cut against the standard narrative that we see in the mainstream media. I feel like that's one of the things that made it jump out to me is like this wouldn't be getting coverage unless it actually worked, because so much of the mainstream like narrative is focused on emphasizing the impact of these like billionaires and how they worked so hard and did it all by themselves and bootstrapped their way up. And so to have this thing that keeps getting media attention that feels like really counter to the logic that is like the software that the entire media that we consume runs on, like that's one of the things that made me be like, I feel like there's must be something here, because if it wasn't true, like the media wouldn't allow it, you know?
Yeah. Like weapons of mass destruction. We were saying that too. Yeah. Like, why would they talk about that? The yellow cake.
That's right.
It's gotta be true.
What is something, Alex, you think is overrated?
This week, I think having an opinion that you feel like you really need to share immediately, I feel like is overrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking on things that you haven't read about or have no experience with, big overrated, stating allegiance to particular foreign policy campaigns without knowing anything about them. Yeah, these things are, you know, I know that this is like an old man complaint, but the internet's kind of like, hey, if you have an opinion, share it here. I don't think you need to. All the time.
Right,
and
right, right.
Even if you don't, just like kind of make one up and yes, just go with exactly. it and then just state it as if you believe it strongly.
Yeah, zealously put it forward.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I'm feeling...
A lot of people, I feel like, have to jump in with takes all the time when you don't always have to. And I get that the internet makes it feel like the spotlight is on you and everyone is waiting for what you're going to say. But you can just say, I'm just kind of checking this out, having my own feelings about it. I'll address them if I feel appropriate publicly whenever that happens.
Absolutely. And I think like there's like a symptom of a feeling of like powerlessness with that. It's like I think everyone feels like generally powerless, and they think that like if they immediately have a take on something or share it immediately or whatever, it like might do something and it won't. And it's fine to not know for a minute. So, and that's especially, you know, obviously this is a big international news week, and that's when this happens more often than not.
Yeah, it's really apparent, like when you see how many celebrities just deleted shit so quickly, when you're like, hold on, are you doing this because you feel like, well, everyone's posting about the thing, I have to also post about the thing.
Right.
Oh, this is... Okay, I'm not actually sure what foreign policy is, so
for sure.
I'm just gonna delete that.
I don't know. I get all my foreign policy information and ideas from Jack Black.
Yeah.
So I was waiting to see where he came down, and fortunately he came through with a heater. So
it's such a
we're all good here.
It's such an overshare week that I know exactly what Jack Black said. So that's where we're at.
Wait, did Jack Black come out with...
Jack Black weighed in.
We're good.
Oh, okay.
It was just one of the, like... Yeah.
All right, JB.
You know. Yeah, it does feel like people are hurting in a very particular way that they are asking people to. Like, a lot of the things that are going viral are like, come out and say what you think about this or else you're not doing the right thing. So, I also understand why people are making this mistake, you know?
No doubt. I think especially, it's just like especially important, and it's always been important to like pause generally, but like now as it seems that like every place we get information has been, particularly the one owned by Elon Musk, has been crushed and stripped of context, and sort of like disinformation is increasingly more prevalent by the day.
Yeah.
It's maybe a perfect time to hone your reflex to find, you know, to substantiate your news.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this was like
opinions on.
This was the moment I was like, I can't use Twitter for shit anymore now.
Right.
Like, it's only for jokes. It's only for jokes. Because I fell for, sadly, mistakenly had regurgitated something that was not true on the show about the $8 billion being okayed from the administration to go to Israel. Mm. And that was like, that was shared by a couple accounts that I was like, oh, I think they have their shit together. And now I'm like, it's a fucking absolute cesspool now. So apologies for any listeners who thought that was actually a true fact, was in fact not. And now I'm like, all right, sticking to actual, like, legitimate news sources as usual, because even the times that, like, you know, journalists or people who appeared as journalists were sharing things, we're very quickly out of that era.
It's
so unreliable to the point that, like I've just gone through thread after thread of people who are like disinformation, misinformation specialists. I'm like, here are the most prevalent things that are being talked about like this week on this platform. And I'm like, this is useful. Because so much discourse is shaped by Twitter still.
Fortunately, I think most people just come to us for like lifestyle things and like how to get to Lambo and, you know, how to live their life, not necessarily for information. So I think we're good.
No. Well, yeah, considering that it's mostly just to start opinions, man.
Yeah. Miles, we do want to check in with a report from Daniel Van Kirk on the ground in a Midwestern airport, filing from his phone, and just, he just like recorded it, sent it to us over email this morning. So let's listen. This is an interview with somebody who works for one of the airlines.
And wanting to, I think he starts off just from the little bit I've heard at the very beginning, getting some travel tips from who else who would know best than somebody who works at the airport. Here we go.
Hey, it's Daniel Van Kirk. I am doing an on-the-ground reporting for the Daily Zeitgeist, the best podcast to get all the happenings going on around the world. I'm actually at
how did he know our new catchphrase
right now? Talking to somebody who knows
TM, the best place to get all
the
happenings.
Better than anybody. They work for an airline in the Midwest. I want to ask you. Let's call you Max. I want you to not
let's call you Max
saying anything. What's the best tip? Like around Thanksgiving, Christmas season, how early should somebody get to the airport? Because I have my theory, but I want to hear yours.
I'm 2 hours, Miles.
Yep. 3 hours early.
Three?
Consolidate your bags.
Wait, you really think 3 hours?
I mean, I don't think that's too far off. Have you been to the airport?
You're
giving yourself two?
2 hours? Traveling domestic?
During the holidays?
Yeah, maybe the holiday is a little different, but I have a hard time getting myself to commit to the extra hour.
I do 2 hours. That's like my standard for domestic flights usually, because that's usually what it is, unless I'm flying out of Burbank. Shout out Burbank, which I'll pull up 30 minutes before boarding and I'm good.
I treat Burbank like I'm catching the bus. I'm like waving plane as people are boarding. I'm like, wait. Hey,
you do have that sense of entitlement. Hey, don't close the door. Don't close it. I'm here, asshole. Let me on.
If you're make me walk outside to get to my plane, you better assume that I'm going to be a little bit haphazard.
Exactly.
Here
we go. Moving on. So he's saying 3 hours.
Yeah. Security.
I mean, that's what they've been
saying. Oh, because it's, you just never know what you're going to run into.
Yep.
I tell people, even if you fly twice a year, you should do clear. Right?
Yeah, that's a good tip.
Because so many people are feeling stress.
I love this guy's energy.
Like, this guy's Daniel, energy rules.
DVK pulls up to this dude, like, hey, man, like, can I do an interview real quick? I'm like, yeah, all right.
You are like, listening what about to clear? Proof that Dave Van Kirk could get along with, like, truly anyone. Not that there's anything wrong, but, like, this is just... This is how he talks to you. This is how he talks to me. This is how he talks to the guy in...
Yeah, at the airport.
At the airport who works for an airline.
Also, clear. I don't have... You have clear?
No, I don't have clear. I have TSA pre-check.
Yeah, I got TSA pre-check.
Pre-check.
Isn't it clear, like... I feel like clear, I didn't do it because, like, it involved more steps. And I was like, nah, dude. Like, miss
me. Well, you have to, like, do it at the airport. And you have to, like... My wife keeps being like, all right, let's do it. Let's like get you clear now that we're at the airport, but we're never there in time.
Why are you taking me to a Scientology
center?
Whenever
I'm traveling, I'm like, I have a bag that's half open with paper streaming out of it just behind me. So
yeah.
Now, I want to ask you this. Do you have more or less drunk passengers around the holiday season?
Way more.
Really?
Oh.
Because it's people who don't fly as much and they have anxiety?
Yep. They get to the airport, they wait, and they drink.
Yeah,
now,
man.
How often do you know ahead of time? Like, you know who your people are going to be before they ever even approach the gate?
Usually see them sitting at the bar.
That's a good point, though.
Of course.
Your drinking is fully on display at the airport. You know, it's not like there's, like, a back bar. Like,
yeah,
where,
yeah.
You know? And so... It's just interesting to hear that, like, the people who work for the airline are clocking you as they walk by and see you at bellied up to the bar.
Right.
With, like, an empty, like, double pint of beer and three shot glasses next to the thing. As
just, like, a whole row of empty shot glasses upside down on the bar. You're like, all right, this one's trouble.
So I'm a bad flyer.
See you later. I'm going to see you later. Yeah. I'm going to see you later.
That's how it usually is.
Okay, here's another question I have. Is there a limit to how many dogs can be on a plane?
Like, physically? Like, by the laws
not
of physics?
Not service animals, not really.
You could have
not service
20
animals.
Dogs.
Could be, like, five or six.
Have you ever seen an animal that wasn't a dog or a cat? Have you had a bird?
No. I haven't seen any, no.
There was a story once, I don't know if it was true or not, that somebody tried to bring a goose or a peacock onto a plane.
Actually, I've seen penguins on the plane.
You've seen the movie Penguins on a Plane?
They had the SeaWorld flight coming in.
No kidding?
Yeah, they had penguins coming off. They walked off.
Okay, now here's
this guy might be a little bit drunk, but...
It's like, it's hard to tell. It's like, is he like fucked up on like on benzos on the job, or is he like one of those super laid back, like one note people? Because like I have friends like where they have like Stephen Wright kind of cadence and delivery.
Yeah.
And you're like, this guy's fucked up. You're like, nah, man, this is them. They got one tune they play and it's this one.
But I have to tell you if I'm wrong. If you're only allowed to bring so many items onto a plane, right? Personal item and a carry-on bag. I think that's pretty universal around airlines. But if you have a bag of food that you bought at the airline, does that count towards one of your items?
Of course not, Daniel.
No, but if it's a huge bag, they do count it.
But if you're
a regular size food bag, no.
So could it be possible if you have some third item you have to bring on,
I mean, this
go
is great
get a
traveling.
Food bag, put it in the food bag, and then you probably will get on the flight with that item because they'll just assume you got like a $27 chicken sandwich.
People get creative.
Carry-on bags that look like McDonald's bags. I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there. That's a brilliant idea.
Just that we all have all these like new stealth bags to bring on because every airline's like, hold on, man. Is your baby needs formula? Oh, that's 40 bucks, man. That's 40 bucks. Oh, wait, it's McDonald's? All right,
never mind. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, this is heavy. What is this, 60 pounds? Man, just put it in the overhead, please. My McDonald's, I just like to keep it up there.
In most airports, if you need a quick bite to eat, because I have a theory that those pre-made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, what do they call the ones that are circular?
They've got a $17 half a ham sandwich. right here.
Is it worth it?
No.
Okay.
Never. No. It's never been worth it. No one has ever bought airport food and been like, this was the right price. They priced this correctly. It is pure price gouging. It is the cruelty of capitalism on display for all to see.
I will give it up to, like, in like a airport in the UK, like you can always go to like a Mark and Spencer's type thing, like M&S or Sainsbury's, and get like just like the meal deal sandwich, which is like 3 pounds. Like, I'm like, yeah, okay. Cut to Burbank.
I thought you meant the sandwich weighs 3 pounds.
No, 3 pounds sterling, though. 3 Great British pounds, GBP. And then at our, like, in fucking Burbank, bro, the other day I got a fucking turkey sandwich. You know how much that shit was?
Yeah, I do.
$19.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to guess 16. Yeah. I think this happened to us together. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's a fucking duh. Anyway, but that's what it be sometimes out here in the US.
I think people should be able to carry on guitars and play a nice little song about, you know, Jesus
slippery
Christ.
That's the thing, though. It's gonna be like fucking Raise You Up on Eagle's Wings or like Wonderwall.
Yeah,
you know,
or Wonderwall, like, but like it ends up being about how much you love Jesus. You know,
it's talking about
a couple lyrics.
Can you make Wonderwall
pastor vibes?
Can you make the Wonderwall be about like the Passion of the Christ?
Oh yeah,
like his crucifixion. Like, today is going to be the day that they throw it back. Whoa. Yeah.
Just Jesus talking to Judas. Like,
wow. Backbeat. The word is on the street that the fire. Wow. Talking to Pontius Pilate on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. All right. We got a point. Moving on.
And then where would you, do you recommend people park on the lot? Like at the actual airport?
Oh, hell no.
Do you think it's usually better to find something somewhere else?
No, it's easier and more secure to park in the garage.
Okay.
Oh.
That's what I did here today, so that makes me feel pretty good about that.
I recommend you just park in the loading area, the passenger loading area, and then pick up your car when you get back, you know? It should be there. That's my advice. I don't travel much.
And then, yeah, when you hop out, throw the sky cap your keys like they're the valet. or the airport cop's like, hey, you can't pass. You're like, hey, man, you don't have to gas her up. Just make sure she don't got any dings in her.
Flights where people have opened up literal 3-course meals on a flight. Is there anything that somebody could ever say like, hey, I'm sorry, you can't eat baked salmon on the flight?
Only if it's an offensive order.
Okay, and that's a discretionary decision as well. Somebody, it's up to somebody. They decide if they think that's too offensive or non-offensive enough.
Yep.
Man.
All right. Well, that's going to be my report where I talk to somebody who's in the know here at an airport in the Midwest. I assume just from both of our dialects, you can tell that we are in St. Louis. And everybody hates it down here because it's St. Louis. I throw it back to you guys. This is Daniel Van Kirk on the ground.
Wow. On the ground, not in the air, unfortunately. But what a report from the street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we learned a lot.
Learned a lot about each other on that one, for sure. Yeah. Like, you really like to cut it close on the holidays. You're trying to do like a McAllister family, trying to make the flight through the airport.
Vibe? If we are not frantic, we are not traveling. Oh. That is, yeah. What am I going to...
That doesn't give you... I mean, like...
If I get 3 hours... So the earliest I've ever... I think this is part of it. The earliest I've ever gotten to the airport was the flight for my honeymoon.
Uh-huh.
And we got there 3 hours early.
Right.
And we did it up a little bit. And we got access to the, like, captain's club or, you know, whatever the
lounge. Yeah, yeah.
The lounge area. Sure. And went in there. And we missed an international flight. Because we were having too much fun and also I hadn't changed. It was back at a time when like the phones didn't automatically change with the time zone. So,
oh my God.
I've been married over 15 years. My wife still hasn't forgiven me for that shit.
Well, like, but also I feel like the airlines usually like at a lounge like that, they scan your boarding pass. So they have an idea of where a passenger might be if it's going to take off.
Yeah, yeah. No, it
maybe
it was
they
bad.
Invented that after you.
Yeah, I think it's called the O'Brien rule.
Yeah.
But we got there. The plane was still there, but they wouldn't let us on. It was really bad.
Yeah.
And I was wearing
kind of internet video.
I was wearing a t-shirt I had had since like eighth grade, and it had holes in it. And my wife had told me not to wear it to the airport because she was like, it's just, they're not going to be nice to you. They think you're, and I was like, what are you talking about? I just want to be comfortable when I'm traveling. The shirt is vintage. And they were like, no, you're not allowed on this plane. Get the fuck out of here. go back outside to rebook. You have to go back through security. And yeah, probably was at least partially due to my ratty ass t-shirt, you know?
Man, classist bullshit, man. Yeah. You're just a man of the people wearing your vaporized whatever. Was it like an REM shirt?
It was a House of Pain t-shirt.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. You ain't getting on that plane, man. Unless you're leaving from like Boston. You. Yeah. Exactly. They're like, all right. Although they're from LA. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways. Well, we're all a little bit wiser heading into this holiday travel season.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk some news. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we're back. And yeah, so you started as a historian of science, and I've heard you talk about like what you learned from Darwin, and you know, Ernst Mach talked about kind of these ideas of, you know, letting the subconscious take its turn. But can you just talk about like just looking at the historical record around these great thinkers and what they knew.
Right. So, you know, part of the reason that I talk about these folks in REST is number one, their lives are really, really well documented, right?
Right.
There were 14,000 letters in sort of the Darwin Archive at Cambridge University. So we actually know an awful lot about their daily lives. We also have enough perspective so that we can, you know, say with a pretty high degree of confidence, Charles Darwin was an important person who's, you know, who made an enduring contribution to or to our understanding of the natural world. Yeah. And, you know, finally, in contrast to today's great, so many of today's great achievers, they don't, you know, we can see them without the filter of like PR handlers and sort of, you know, people who are worried about their stock price, sort of making the argument that, you know, these people actually sort of never rest. They're always serving the customer, creating delightful products, blah, blah, blah. And so we have actually a better understanding of how they worked and how they did their work than we do of many inventors and entrepreneurs today.
I don't know, that little fish with feet that Darwin came up with was pretty sick marketing, I got to say. That branding is pretty tight. He's kind of a marketing genius.
Yeah. He did have his moments. You know, it's just too bad that he was working before there was actually any, you know, social media. But, you know,
I've always thought of him more as an influencer than anything. But yeah, okay. I think he did other important stuff.
You know, he definitely had a lot of influence. No question about that.
Yeah.
And the other thing you see when you look at these lives is there's an amazing consistency in things like their daily schedules and sort of when they worked, when they took breaks, and how they kind of layered these periods of really focused work of only like 90 minutes or 90 minutes to 2 hours. And then a break, and then another deep dive, what Cal Newport calls deep work. And you do that like 3 times a day. And that's about all they needed in order to, you know, come up with ideas that would have changed the world. And I think that's a great challenge to the assumption that in order to do, you know, world-changing stuff, we have to work enormously long hours. We have to, in effect, sacrifice ourselves and our happiness and our health and sometimes our families in, you know, sort of to make, you know, sort of to reach some mountaintop, make a discovery, you know, et cetera. And that it's possible to have, you know, sort of lives that are longer, that are more sustainable, but also still let us do really amazing work that sort of, you know, lets us express our passions and that sort of is deeply satisfying for a really long time. So that ultimately is, you know, what Darwin taught me, along with the fish with the feet.
Yeah. Which is, I got a ton of those in my garage I'm trying to get rid of, if you want to buy some.
Yeah. And that is kind of the whole point of this episode, is actually trying to help Miles move that product, because he is underwater on those things, man.
I shouldn't have made it in pure gold. I think that's where I went wrong.
Made it in pure gold.
Yeah. But what do you think? Like, so I, you know, we talk about culturally, right? Like how some places work themselves to death. I know that from like, I have a Japanese family who, when I first like was working in media, they thought my job was not serious because I wasn't like working day and night. What was sort of the evolution of being able to be like, I don't know, Darwin works like a couple hours a day, to sort of this like new, like the exaltation of like the nonstop working person, and that is why they are successful. How did we like what jumps did we make? I'm assuming the industrial age had a lot to do with that, but where were we and where are we now, essentially?
It did have a lot to do with it, but even, you know, 100 years ago, there was this sense that, you know, super successful people have kind of earned the right to leisure because of their success. You know, not that getting rich meant that you had to never, ever stop. Like, if you look at old issues of Forbes magazine from the 1910s, 1920s, right? Forbes magazine has never been one that's been especially critical of capitalists. But, you know, lots of those profiles have stuff about how these guys spend, like, you know, still go to Minnesota to tramp in the woods where they grew up before, you know, sort of coming back to Wall Street and, you know, sort of, you know, and sort of cornering the silver market. I think, you know, so you know, part, but what happened to change that, I think, really starts like in the 70s and 80s when you have sort of the realignment of the American economy. You have sort of the, sort of, along with the growth of the computer industry, of the high-tech industry, and finance simultaneously, both of which teach us that the way to be successful now is not to start at the bottom, pay your dues, and work your way up, right? The age in which both General Electric and General Motors could be run by guys named Charlie Wilson, both of whom started in the mailrooms of their companies, was now over, right? The way you became rich was to be like Steve Jobs, right? Or to have overnight success, or like, you know, Charlie Sheen in Wall Street. And that becomes the model for what a successful career looks like, in a sense, sort of you get rich before the next, you know, either before your technical skills become obsolete, before the next turn of Moore's Law means that someone else has a sort of chance at bat, or, you know, sort of the next, or sort of the, you know, the next stage in the global economy or economic turndown, or of, you know, wipes everybody out. And then, you know, other structural factors like sort of the growth of, or of increasing reliance on sort of temporary labor, stalling of wages, and culturally, I think the sensibility that, you know, work goes from something that is important in every American's life to essentially the only thing, right? More important than family, than community, than religion. It means that it is like the undisputed champion of everybody's existence. And so, you know, all of that stuff together means that it's been really hard to push back against all of that and to imagine an alternative. And it's taken something as dramatic as the pandemic, right, to sort of shift, to make a lot of us shift gears to see that actually, you know, all these things that we took for granted that we thought were like inevitable and inescapable turn out to be things that we can change. And to begin to take seriously the possibility that we can actually, you know, sort of rather than have our workplaces changed by a virus, make these changes ourselves for the better. But, you know, that's a brief history of how we got in here and how we're getting out.
It's interesting to me that it happened in like the 70s and 80s at a time when like people started really like hoarding and getting immoral amounts of wealth for like doing things that like building things that weren't lasting, or, you know, doing
corporate raiding and stuff.
Yeah, like corporate raiding. Mm-hmm. Like, it reminds me of the anecdote from the People's History of the United States where like the War Department changes its name to the Department of Defense at the moment that they start waging non-defensive wars, because they're like, they need this, you know, linguistic defense mechanism to like throw people's attention away. And it's like the powers that be in capitalism need this idea that like, well, you just have to work harder. You just outwork everyone to justify that they're actually not doing anything that is harder or more worthwhile, and certainly not millions of times more important than the people who they're out earning by a factor of a million.
You know, Jack, that points to another important thing, which is that, you know, we've come to see of both success and challenges in the workplace as totally like sort of individual and personal, right? Sort of my success is because I worked enormously long hours, not because I have a social network, I have patrons, friends, you know, et cetera, right? And if I have a, you know, sort of if I have a problem at work, or if I want to be more successful, sort of the, you know, the key is all in what I myself do, right? Get up earlier, hustle harder, et cetera. And I think that we've, you know, even those of us who turn out whose clocks have 30 hours in a day,
thank you,
discover that, you know, at some point you run out of hours, and the ability, you know, the ability to solve problems that way hits a limit. And the fact that we all share, that we all have these kinds of problems, suggests that actually maybe a more powerful and enduring way to deal with them would be to solve them together. right? To act collectively. And that's one of the big things behind stuff like sort of the 4-day week, is that, you know, it's something that's done in companies where everybody does it, from the CEO or of, you know, CEO on down. And yeah. I think part of the success of the movement has been that it has, you know, it has shown us that, shown us the power of collective action to change how we work and to make work better for us all.
Yeah. That just made me think of the fact that Zach Morris is the ultimate capitalist, because
he can freeze time.
He can freeze time. Yeah. And that
Saved by the Bell reference.
Saved by the Bell. Yeah, of course. I don't think I have to explain that to anybody here, but I'm sure this comes up all the time in academic circles. But that was a fantasy. That was like a thing that I was, when I was younger, I was like, oh man, to be able to freeze time, you have like so much extra time. I could like get so good at things, or like do all my work and then just like come back. And it's really, you know, living my life on Zach Morris's clock, you know?
How, like, I'm curious to see, like, you know, when talking about...
I got a lot
about,
more on Zach Morris here, Miles,
I was actually about to talk about the Zach Morris when he had to take two people to the same dance, and how he really could have been. Jack, let me finish the question.
Okay, my bad.
No, but Alex, like, we talk a lot about on the show just sort of the... just terrible habit we have, especially in America and other like Western capitalist societies, of just like, it's all about work. Productivity is the only metric to define your life. And like, you know, we see that obviously like in a more professional level, but I feel like it's also really difficult for people who like have like, you know, hourly wage working jobs and things like that. What is the sort of same way? Because obviously I feel like when people go, like, I'm sure if you tell a business owner, it's like, oh, 4 weeks, what, for all my productivity to go down? How do those sort of lessons apply to various industries? Because I can easily see how, like, in a professional thing, it's like, well, we've got all these like invoices we have to process as an accounting firm or whatever. Once you're done, then you have something there. But like for something that's like sort of like an always on business, like retail consumer sort of facing business, what is the same way? What is the way that needs to be messaged to those people for them to not think, well, my line will go down if this happens? And how does this sort of vision offer a new sort of form of, I guess, you know, time liberation for workers that are like in every sector?
Right. So, okay, first of all, I think that the 4-day week is something that the very, you know, whose very earliest adopters tended more to be in like professional and creative services. And partly because that work is kind of more malleable or more shapeable by individuals. It's also tends to be a little more project-based. And so,
right.
And you know, you're not like actually moving physical things around. So sort of easier to imagine how to redesign it. But one of the really interesting things is that we've seen is it move into places like nursing. And I'm actually working with a police department that's moving, that is experimenting with 32-hour work weeks for officers. You know, and talk about two industries where you don't want, you know, sleep deprived or of overworked people coming in and making mistakes, is like in an ICU and, you know, sort of during any interaction with law enforcement. And what we found there is that, you know, okay, a couple things. Number one, that kind of work turns out to be just as creative as what we think of as, you know, creative work of like people sitting around in meetings, you know, drawing on whiteboards. It's just, we don't recognize it as such, right? There's just as much ingenuity or of problem-solving skill, et cetera, required to either diffuse a situation, to, you know, assess what's going on in an emergency room, to calm down people. And so this kind of work is just as responsive to the benefits of a shorter work week on the part of individuals. Now, the way that organizations make it work is for nurses, you know, like places like nursing homes, they have huge issues around sort of turnover and sort of recruitment and retention, right? These often are jobs that are not very well paid. They're highly stressful. And so, you know, it's easy for people to come into those jobs, work, you know, for maybe a year or two, and even if they like it, to find the stresses, you know, or are too much and for them to leave. Moving to a shorter work week means that they have more time for recovery. So more time to, you know, and that, but also it means that the organizations themselves, like nursing homes that have moved to 6-hour shifts, while still paying people the same amount of money that they were paying for 8-hour shifts, they save enough in, like, in temp agency fees. You know, when someone calls in sick, you got to get someone from a temp agency, and it's like 5 times as expensive per hour as to, or of, you know, have the regular full-time person. You save so much money on that that the programs pay for themselves, and you get higher quality of care. So less administration of psychotropic drugs, fewer like bed sores, slips and falls, all the kinds of things that indicate whether whether nursing home residents or people in a hospital are being well cared for. And so, you know, in a sense, basically, there are industries in which there are hidden costs to overwork and high turnover that a 4-day week are subsidized by. That's, and we're seeing, you know, we're seeing that in the restaurant industry, in healthcare, the trial with the police force. It's an 80-person force, and they've saved something like $200,000 in overtime, which is like incredible in like the last, you know, 4 months or so that they've been doing it. And so, you know, it's not just that, you know, these are sort of, these are jobs that, you know, in which individuals benefit, but it turns out that once you dive into the numbers, there often are kind of systemic savings that justify moving from eight-hour shifts to shorter ones. So, you know, even when you have to pay more people, you have to hire more staff, it's, you know, the numbers still work out. And then with retail, the most interesting thing I'm seeing has been places that will stay open now for 12 hours and have 2 6-hour shifts. So that means that you get more walk-in, you know, you get more walk-ins. People can, you know, come into the store or the garage before work, you know, maybe get some work done or before they've got to, you know, drop the kids off. And it means that, you know, for, you know, you get more customers and more revenue. And so even if you have to hire sort of 1 or 2 more people, it often can pay for itself that way, as on more sales.
Yeah.
It's wild to think about the creative work that police do. That's crazy, because every time I'm pulled over, they're like, "Why are you in this? Why are you in this neighborhood?" Because they're coming up with like really interesting reasons why I shouldn't be there. But
in
I
their
see
mind,
now
yeah, they have
that
some
it's an
theories.
Exhaustion issue. I'm like, dude, just get some rest.
Yeah, hey buddy, maybe you could. Do you need a nap? sorry, officer, sir, you seem so sleepy. You seem so sleepy.
Go to bed. Shh. But no, it is like, is there potentially any, like, this could apply to any job, right? Like, is there, like, in when looking at sort of the way we toil and labor, is there any job where you're like, okay, maybe that one has to kind of stay that way? My perspective, I'm like, I think this applies to everything, right? Can we just call it a day? Everyone goes to 4 days?
I think, you know, looking at it economically, I think if you commute to work by helicopter, it's going to be hard to move to a 4-day week. So like if you're working on an oil rig or something, right? It's like 10 days on, 10 days off. Just the cost of getting to work and back is such that a 4-day week is probably not going to work very well. And then after that, it really becomes a matter of like a professional ideology.
Right.
Hedge funds are not going to do it because they have constructed incredibly profitable systems for hiring 22-year-olds, working them to death, and then discarding the desiccated husks 3 years later and hiring new kids, right?
Right.
So until their, you know, Viking freezers are full of Wagyu beef in their, like, apocalypse bunkers, they're not going to have a lot of
incentive. Oh, you're looking at my vision board?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, but there were, you know, and then places like law and medicine, you know, they pride themselves on being able to work these kinds of titanically long hours. And they, even though they recognize that there are high costs to it and it leads to sort of instability for organizations and unnecessary burnout, until now, it's been hard to envision constructing something different. But so, you know, And some of the, you know, there definitely are older people in these fields who really resist the idea that you can, you know, sort of you can scale back hours and make the work better without making the work worse.
Right.
You know, occasionally you get people who say, I can't do this because, look, I don't have another life other than reading SEC filings or, you know, x-rays. So don't ask me to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take one more break. And then I have another thing that I heard you say that kind of made the whole thing fall into place for me. So we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we're back, and this report, Miles, from Moody's, nothing has ever made more sense to me in my life than the news that the Cheesecake Factory is propping up America's consumer economy.
Yeah. Everything. You know, Moody's likes to get in the business of business and put out their little analyses about what's going on. They talk a lot about malls. Apparently, for Mean Girls Day that we completely fucked up. So sorry about that on October 3rd. Humiliating. They released this like report on like the state of certain malls, and like the top, like the observations are like the most obvious one at the top was pretty clear to everyone. Obviously, like e-commerce has like obliterated mall traffic. Then there were a few others I didn't really think of, but like totally makes sense in terms of the survival of a mall. Like, people prefer lifestyle centers or outlets that are more that aren't enclosed, because people just kind of these days rather park and walk directly to the store they need to go to rather than walking through 9 dead department stores
right,
just to get to like the inside part of the mall like we used to have to. And having like non-traditional businesses like an arcade or a trampoline park or a bowling alley helps, like plays a, I guess, a somewhat a measurable role in the ability of a mall's, you know, survival factor, survival rating. But here's the other part, right? Malls that do not have a cheesecake factory are 21% more likely to be behind on loan payments than malls that do have a cheesecake factory.
Yep.
And they're like, and again, they're like, we're not saying, you know, the causation is correlation here or correlation is causation here, but it's clear that people go to a fucking cheesecake factory. It's like having an Apple store. People, if you got it there, people will go to it. And yes, maybe it has somewhat to do with the layout, but these are the kinds of stores that no matter what, people will be like, oh, yeah, I have to go to the mall because that's where the Apple store is. Or now the Cheesecake Factory. And now I'm just like, what is it? Is it the brown bread? Is it the menu as thick as phone books?
Yeah, I've been saying for a long time, I think the Cheesecake Factory menu is the height of Western colonial culture. It is like the thing that will be in our, like the wing of the museum dedicated to this period in history and this place in the world.
Right.
Where does P.F. Chang's
like, how did they fucking fit this many places into a single kitchen like that?
P.F. Chang's.
That doesn't make sense. P.F. Chang's is but like P.F. Chang's, they like took two things from the P.F. Chang's menu and like that's in there, you know, like
they did it all.
They did it all.
I grew up as a teenager. I worked at the mall for 5-6 years into my like into college too. And our mall was like, and I grew up white trash, and so our mall the anchor restaurant was a Ruby Tuesdays, which is a real bummer.
Yeah,
but like when I grew up again, like Cheesecake Factory was like aspirational, like you, it was like a fancy.
Oh yeah
it was Cheesecake like our family wasn't going out to the Cheesecake Factory every night, you know, like once a year maybe.
Yeah, one of the first dates that like I went on like as a freshman in college, I was like, fuck, here. I'm like, we're here, dude. Like, I've saved a little money, and it's time to take Shorty to the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh,
like,
yes. It's a
I was
Babe,
so fucking excited.
Love you. And so, and therefore, we're doing
therefore,
it.
Therefore,
we're
doing
the Cheesecake
it.
Factory.
And I'm having Chicken Littles again. Don't
I love it.
Criticize
I was a big, like, I was a big, like, as a teen, as a, like, feral teen, I was a big, like, let's go with your girl to the restaurant and, like, go to, like, what I considered a nice restaurant, which in retrospect all was, like, incredibly cheesy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I loved that. Loved
go to Red Robin or something.
Yeah. Bottomless fries forever.
Yeah. Fuddruckers. Those are, like, the early date spots where you're, like, these are places my parents would take me, and therefore this is all I have in terms of knowledge of a restaurant for a date.
This is the only proximity to adult knowledge I have.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I know there's a Fuddruckers over there.
We used to go, there was an Eastside Mario's in the mall parking lot, and there was a guy from my town named Pete Finkel, and he would play like contemporary covers of songs at the Eastside Mario's, like Green Day's Time of Your Life. And you'd go and see this guy from your town play music at Eastside Mario's on your date with some girl. And it was so of a time, it was remarkable. I really miss how weird that was.
The simpler times. Can you think of a Cheesecake Factory that's gone? Have you ever seen a Cheesecake Factory go out of business? I've seen one
against
relocate.
Its will? Yeah,
that's
no. They, yeah,
I've seen one relocate.
Cheesecake Factory decides when it's done with you. But the Cheesecake Factory is not, it'll just be like, we're going to move over here to bless this other establishment with our presence.
It's never like, no one's coming here. Everyone goes. And these things, they're probably going to be standing that people are going to do an analysis and be like, these are made of Roman concrete. That's why they still stand to this day.
It's the only thing that's left standing of America in 3,000 years is just Cheesecake Factories. It's interesting. Is this because the Cheesecake Factory brings so much people to, you know, so much business, or does the Cheesecake Factory have like some magic understanding of like where to locate? You know,
well, based on all the malls I know that do or do not have a Cheesecake Factory, like
it's
the
like
malls,
the high end shit.
Yeah, the malls that are like predisposed to already have people who are regularly going to come with disposable income are hitting that Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm shocked that our mall that had Ruby Tuesdays as an anchor is still trucking. Because
it is.
Oh yeah, the main mall in South Portland, Maine, is still somehow vibrant.
Do you know what they put into the department stores? Like, are they now like the Bubble World exhibit?
Oh, you mean like what did they replace all the selfie failed museum. Anchor stores with?
I don't know.
Although, like that's some of my favorite. There's a mall, unfortunately, that name I can't remember, but there's a mall in Portland, Oregon that has like a full comic and zine shop in like an old spot, and that's I love that. It feels. Yeah. Like truly, you know, sideways apocalyptic in a way that I enjoy.
There's got to be a lot of haunted houses that have gone into those spaces
for sure,
right?
You got to. It's always interesting to see, like, because it'll always be then there's like small businesses where you can see it and you're like, oh, this poor fucking motherfucker, this shit is not gonna last, and like you probably put your whole fucking life into this terrible retail concept, and then you see ones that have been
like
there for
a one-off
decades.
In a mall, like a one-off retail concept in a mall. Oh god.
And I get like, and you like see it, you're like, no, I feel so, I'm so sorry, you are, oh, you're just throwing money away. Then but then it lasts for like 10 years and you're like, oh, it's a drug front.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Okay, I don't have to feel bad because you don't care that no one's in there because you're just laundering money through here.
Yeah, the one I was just talking about in Portland, Oregon is called the Lloyd Center, and it's like just like it feels like a flea market. It feels like it's all just like small businesses that people like put it all on the line for. Yeah. And they're like, you know, it's like custom snuggies or whatever, and you're like, all right, I guess, okay, I hope
that's,
God, I hope
that's
for you
what I love about like Portland is the specificity of the businesses. Like it, the entrepreneurial spirit of Portland, Oregon is fucking, I've never seen anything like it, where they're like, yeah, man, it's like a bespoke hot sauce and beer place.
My podcast I co-host with Sarah Marshall from You're Wrong About, and there's another Sarah Marshall from Portland, Oregon who runs a bespoke hot sauce company.
Oh, really? And it's funny, too, because like I'm like not knocking it, because instantly I'm like, I mean, yeah, beer's cool, but I love hot sauce. And I love to see when people are just like, you know, aggregating a ton of local hot sauce. I'm like, this is great. And I was asking some people locally, I'm like, is it high turnover like in this area, like with the business? Like, yeah, it can be. But some things remain.
For sure.
All right. Well, at the top, we mentioned that there has been some misinformation going around, and I have to assume that you guys were talking about Skittles when you mentioned that.
Because
there have been erroneous claims that Skittles are now banned in California, specifically Mario Lopez, who, along with Jack Black, is the person who I go to for most of my information. Most of my reportage has to come through Mario Lopez. He tweeted, "Crime is through the roof, worst drug epidemic ever, and homelessness at an all-time high in California. Let's focus on Skittles." And then posted a picture that says, "California becomes first U.S. state to ban Skittles and 12,000 additional products for cancer-causing additives." I don't know. Maybe this is the first step. Mario Lopez going to run for president. We can all hope.
At Mario Lopez, viva.
Did this news come from Nextdoor? I feel like this is something that would like
right?
You would see on Nextdoor. The other day, I was like, I don't even know why I'm on Nextdoor. It was like, I found a pet once, a lost pet, and I was like, I should go on Nextdoor, and now I'm never going to get off. But people were very up in arms about the fact that I think California, there's a law that was passed that you can't make your employee run after a shoplifter anymore. Uh-huh. Rightfully so. Like, that should never have been a thing in the first place. And people were angry as if the government had come into their house and taken all their money and then burned it down. And I was like, why? This is like, this Skittles news is another one of those, it feels like. Yeah. So is it true? It's not true?
It's not true. It is not true. Okay. So, I mean, they tried it. Gavin Newsom signed a bill banning certain food additives. And one of the things that he pointed out, because everyone was like, oh, you're going to ban Skittles? Skittles go out of business then, dude. California, you're not going to be able to buy Skittles? Fuck that. And he was like, here is a bag of Skittles from the EU where the carcinogenic chemicals that they put in the American version of Skittles is illegal. They just made it less cancerous in the EU and are still able to sell both things and not go out of business. And people were like, nah, fuck that. And so that got taken out of the bill, the Skittles ban.
There's like, just keep it as it. Like, they could have made it less potentially cancerous. And
yes.
And that just isn't going to happen.
Yes.
Cool.
He held a package of Skittles from the EU, argued it's demonstrable proof that the food industry is capable of maintaining product lines while complying with different public health laws country by country. And so, therefore, an earlier version of the bill had a ban on titanium dioxide, which sounds like a thing that you want to ingest with your food.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, pepper a little.
It's got two
titanium dioxides on there, which we've talked about it before. It's a controversial food additive found in Skittles and a bunch of other foods. And it's been banned in the EU. It was banned last year. And, you know, it's just not great. Like, they think it could be bad, like, when it gets into your cells. But it was removed from the California bill after lobbyists argued that it was safe to use in these applications.
Don't worry.
Small amounts in products like Skittles.
This is how you know Gavin Newsom is running for president eventually. Like, he's already doing, like, he's like, you know, like, oh, I'm not, I'm, like, well, fine, we're good with titanium dioxide. Or, like, the thing where he's like, I'm going to cap insulin costs. No, I'm not, actually. I'll say that out loud, and then when it comes time to sign a bill, I'm not going to do that. Or be like, we're going to get striking workers unemployment. He didn't.
Right.
So he's, like, really good at that, like, presenting himself as someone who's, like, got his head in the game and has his, like, progressive credentials, while also being like, and I'm a friend to business and healthcare. Don't worry, my man.
Making up that he was like a progressive guy at one point? That was the case, right? Like, he was like an actual progressive politician from San Francisco.
Yeah, like, as the mayor of San Francisco, like, I guess comparatively. But he's always, I think the thing that people have always, that the sort of criticism is, like, he's always been very sly about it. He's very coy, you know, and he knows what to say, when to say it and not say things, when to not. So it's, you're always like, he presents like a total piece of shit, but he might be a total piece of shit too. Who knows?
But yeah, so
that pushback hair, though, you know, you gotta know.
Goddamn, the pushback, what a head hair. Of hair.
Yeah, it's slick back, Jack, we already know.
I can't think of somebody whose hair I would want to touch less
than, like, Gavin Newsom's?
Yeah, his hair feels like it. Whatever you would get on your hand from touching it would be on there for a while.
It would stick around.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather touch, like, all, like, the male leads in, like, Boardwalk Empire, who you saw them put, like, lard in their hair. I'd be like, I'm having a go.
Yeah, lard never hurt anyone.
I'd rather touch that or, like, pomade than, like, the whatever Gavin Newsom's got going on.
You know whose head I bet is filthy is Bill Maher. I bet you would touch his head and your hand would never be the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to get that in on Bill Maher.
Yeah. His fucking hair is gross.
New rules. Your hair is terrible.
You just have to be, like, stuck to your hand like a spider web. You'd, like, wash it.
I say this as someone with, like, a radically receding and depleting hairline. I don't ever want to touch
the texture. The texture of it, though, it feels like it could be like a cat's tongue. Somehow, when you're like, what the fuck? That's hair? Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. Sure is.
It's what karma does to your hair.
Oh, it's not hair? Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Have you never touched a nest of spider webs before?
Okay. Powered by Islamophobia? Okay. Okay. Sorry, Snowflake.
It's scary. Both of your impressions, like, facially, are scarily accurate. You really
I'm sorry. Yeah.
We as, like, a people have had to listen to that for 30 years. And
I
now
know, right?
We're upset about it.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, so this is one of those things. The science is uncertain, but usually, like, all things being equal, the, you know, people in charge of making decisions on behalf of millions of people would be like, we don't know, and therefore you can't put it in food that is mostly eaten by children.
Yeah, just as, like, a precaution.
Yeah, and that's how it works in the EU. But in these United States, you know, you got lobbying groups that are more powerful than the young children candy eating lobby.
But it's funny though how much like my brain has been shaped by this like American attitude towards stuff. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can't even prove it though. So like, right. Fine, let it rip.
Yeah.
we don't know. It's better to know. It's better. Yeah. Our thing is, it's better to know what you're putting in your body than letting it rip. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, maybe.
The American to me is kind of like, why don't you suck it up? And then I realize that I've just internalized a terrible ideology.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, wait, that's the titanium dioxide talking.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Years of
You've internalized a bunch of microplastics in addition to American.
Yeah. It's fine. Let it rip.
My teeth
Who are
you blown?
Talking to? How can the red ones taste the best? It's because of the flavor inside. It's not because of the, that's what they tell you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.